Since the dawn of the 21st century, scientific discovery has rushed forward at lightning speed. Genetics, physics, computerized technology, robotics, virtual reality. Join Derek and Sharon Gilbert as they uncover the truths behind this ultimate scientific deception. Get ready for Sci Friday.
Life! It's all about Sci Friday from Skywatch TV. Welcome, I'm Derek Gilbert. Joining us, our science advisor and my best friend, the author of the highly rated and best-selling Red Wing Saga, Sharon K. Gilbert.
Well, thank you, honey. Still, it's nice to be back at the desk.
Yes, it is. Well, we had a wonderful time last weekend in Dallas at the Hear the Watchmen conference. Mm-hmm. So many people coming up. And one of the greatest compliments we received the entire weekend was, we watch your show so often, we love to turn it on before we go to bed because your voices help us fall asleep.
I know, you're so soothing sounding. Oh, gosh, I've heard. In fact, Steve Quayle told me one time if I would just read a story that he could play and fall asleep to, because something about the tone of your voice, Sharon, he said. I'm not sure if that's a compliment or not.
It's meant as a compliment.
It's meant as one, and I actually receive it that way. So yeah. If we can help you fall asleep, getting some information, then that means that we're programming you while you're sleeping.
That's right. Well, this week we're talking about life and attempts by science, going all the way back into the ancient world to artificially instill life or to continue life after death.
You know, that is so true. In fact, before you and I started rolling here, we were talking this morning. Everywhere around us, we're seeing new life. The leaves are coming back on the trees, and the plants are starting to grow again, and flowers are popping up everywhere. Birds are back, and they're starting to build nests. This idea of the circle of life, mm-hmm. that things die, that they have offspring that live, and then those live, and die. You're born, you live, you die. But sometimes people die what we consider prematurely, and
right,
so this idea of death after life, that's a reality.
Yeah.
Or life after death.
Mm-hmm.
We believers in Christ, we believe that that is also a reality, but there's a false version of that.
Right, right.
So we're going to talk really briefly about death after life, and those are diseases that, and other activities that can end your life prematurely, and then most of this discussion will be about life after death.
Right.
I think the big one for death after life right now going on in the world, it's not getting enough play, is the Ebola crisis, which is still going on in Congo. 1,100 cases,
yeah.
Nearly 700 deaths.
That is something I talked about earlier this week, but the number of cases is growing, and it's growing more quickly over the last several weeks than it had previously.
Yes, the infection rate is much faster now, and the experts really aren't sure why that is. It's gotten into some more populated areas. That's definitely it. But also, when you get more people sick and more people dying, then you have more funerals. And there are still practitioners of the religious rites that take place over there with regards to the washing of the dead and the way you handle them. And even though the healthcare professionals are instructing them, don't do this, when you have a deep-seated belief that if you don't do that, mm-hmm. your loved one is not going to go into the other world properly,
right,
you will risk contracting the disease in order to do the right thing.
Yeah, this is a problem we talked about with the outbreak of bubonic plague, mm-hmm. in Madagascar.
Yes.
Where the animist religion or the veneration of the ancestors requires that they exhume their ancestors from time to time, rewrap the bodies, and then dance with them.
Yeah, the ancestors will whisper, you need to take me out. And so, as you get all these whispers going then there's this big movement toward it, and they dance with the dead.
And
they get sick sometimes.
Right. Health officials were warning against this, but it's a very old practice. It's hard to break the tradition and essentially the bondage that the people are in, because as Christians, we understand what's happening there. They're not actually hearing the voices of their dead ancestors. They're hearing from demons who are, in fact, the spirits of the Nephilim, the giants who were destroyed in the flood.
Exactly. The Rephaim that you write about in your books. And by the way, if you don't have Derek's books, you can get a couple of them in the Red Wing Saga package. We'll tell you about that after the break. But that not only is cholera, Ebola, a major problem, but cholera is also a major, major problem.
Right.
In fact, it is now hitting Mozambique, where Hurricane Idai, is it pronounced Idai?
Idai. Yeah.
Idai.
Yeah.
Was so devastating, the worst one in 30 years.
Yeah, Mozambique, Malawi, and one of the other nations down there, whose name I forget, Mali perhaps. But anyway, those southeastern African nations were devastated by this cyclone, and Mozambique, the hardest hit. And you're right, because of the poor infrastructure to begin with, and what little there was destroyed by this cyclone. Cholera is beginning to spread, and that's nasty. Once it gets started, it's very difficult to stop.
It's very difficult
Haiti
to get it
is
stopped.
Still fighting it after the massive earthquake they had there years ago.
Because it gets into the surrounding topsoil and the water sources, and it's very, very difficult to eradicate it once it's taken hold. So, yes, that idea that it's a guarantee that we are going to have death after life. Mankind, we usually live to be, 100 or less. Most people live to be in their 70s or so. But there are diseases that will take you in childhood sometimes. The Pecks are dealing with a life-threatening illness with their son, Nathan. And so far, the Lord, praise his holy name, is helping the doctors to fight that disease.
Right.
And we're praying and just believing that Nathan is going to be healed. And that is often what happens. But not always.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes for his reasons, God will allow a loved one to come to him before we are ready. And when
there are so many stories where a loved one has died in the Lord, and a funeral has been an opportunity for a preacher to preach a salvation sermon.
Right.
And lots of people who've watched the family go through this terrible ordeal, they get saved at that funeral.
Yeah, yeah. We're viewing this through human eyes with limited perception, because life does not end at death.
No.
We are all guaranteed eternal life. The transhumanist movement and those who seek to preserve their ancestors through these rituals, which is not a new thing, this has been ongoing for thousands of years, are looking at it completely the wrong way. We've been promised eternal bodies, glorified bodies. That's something we don't hear preached in our churches often enough, by the way, is the resurrection.
Yes.
The resurrection,
yes,
which was a major point of contention between the Pharisees and the Sadducees in the time of Jesus and the apostles.
They were Sadducee.
Because, yes, they didn't believe in the resurrection.
Well, they didn't believe in a bodily resurrection.
Correct. Whereas the Pharisees did, and they argued about this, and violently. That's a period of history I don't understand well enough, but there was almost a civil war in Judea.
Well, look at the infighting in the body of Christ.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the joke about the circuit or firing squad. We're all standing with our guns pointed inwards. But that is something that we've been promised, that we will be raised up into incorruptible bodies, glorified bodies. And the transhumanists are offering us something based on silicon.
Yes.
You know, silicon heaven.
Or an altered carbon.
All altered carbon.
Exactly, because, we get to this idea of artificial genomes. In fact, scientists have just said that they have trained a computer on how to arrange base pairs in a way that creates an artificial genome. In other words, it's a new book. But they still use the same letters created by God.
Exactly.
You get your own dirt, scientists.
So this is a very old thing. But it begs the question, and this is something that we're working on now for a book that, God willing, and assuming we make our word count, will be out in the fall, in fact, right around Halloween time, appropriately enough, called Profiling the Dead. Because this idea that the dead can still interact with the living and influence the world of the living is very, very old.
Yes.
In the research that we've been doing into ancient Mesopotamia, the culture around the ancient Hebrews, we found that going back 5,000 years, there was a belief that the ancestors didn't really die at death, that they were still there, that there was an existence that continued beyond the physical. Where did they get that idea? That's the question. Because it was just sort of assumed, at least in the texts that I've been reading, and I'm certainly not PhD level in this study, but I've been reading a lot of papers on this by guys who are PhDs, men and women who've spent their lives studying this, and it seems like it's just sort of assumed, taken as given, that the spirit of the ancestors, once they passed on, don't cease to be. They just continue on. Now, if we were looking at this from just physical, through natural eyes, As many scientists do, mm-hmm. as the naturalist philosophers of the Greeks did.
If we had just evolved from lower order organisms.
Right, exactly. Yes, Darwinian evolution is true, and there is no existence after our last breath, which is the basis of the transhumanist belief. It was also the belief of the Epicureans, the philosophers mm-hmm. who Paul debated on Mars Hill in Athens, that all there is what's in this life. Why then did the ancient Sumerians and Amorites, who replaced the Sumerians in Mesopotamia, why did they come to believe that the spirits of their ancestors continued on after death? In fact, where did they get the idea of gods at all? Well, these are kind of rhetorical questions because from a Christian worldview, understanding that the Bible is true, we understand that they were influenced by spirit beings mm-hmm. called the sons of God.
Yes, but they're wonderful angels. Philosophical questions.
Right.
And they're big questions that need answers. And you and I aren't going to give an exhaustive answer in Profiling the Dead, but we're going to try to approach it.
Mm-hmm.
So that, again, that will be out about Halloween, and that'll come out with book six of the Red Wing Saga, which is Realms of the Dead.
Right, right.
Appropriately at Halloween. But this idea of life after death. One of the questions that I posed to you one day when we were discussing various things to put into Profiling the Dead, I asked the question, and I don't have an answer for it. When Adam was told, if you eat of this tree on that day,
mm-hmm.
you will die.
Right, right.
How did Adam have a reference for the word die?
That's something I never thought of before because it requires trying to think outside of our own assumptions. I mean, we all assume that people know, I mean, once you're past childhood anyway, children need to have the concept explained to them. But clearly, Adam in the Bible didn't say, wait, what is this die that you speak of? What is mm-hmm. this death of which you speak? I don't understand the concept.
If he did, it's not included in the text that we were given.
Right, right. It's sort of implied in the text that mm-hmm. Adam and Eve already knew what death was.
Yes.
And didn't want to go there.
Yes.
Because they said, well, you know, we can't do this because if we do, we'll die. And we understand, again, the implication is it's sort of unspoken, but we understand that they understood that this was not a desirable state of being.
Exactly. So at the very least, Adam and Eve understood death.
Right.
And what it meant, which means that possibly the Elohim also had an understanding of death. But you have to ask, why?
That's a really good question.
Had they seen one of their own die? And I put that in air quotes because I'm not really sure what the concept of death in that realm would have been.
Yeah. That's a really good question because there is an example in the Bible of a rebel before the creation of Adam and Eve. And I'm not talking about the rebel in the garden, Lucifer, Satan,
right.
the serpent, the Nakash. That is chaos.
Mm-hmm.
In Genesis 1, verse 2, the Spirit of God is hovering over the face of the waters and the deep.
Yes,
and the
to
word,
home.
Yes, to home in Hebrew is a cognate, same word, different language, for an Akkadian word, temtum, which in turn is the cognate for the Sumerian word Tiamat, which was the chaos monster, the primordial chaos from which order was created, in their view, of course, by Marduk, the chief god,
sometimes
eventually,
called
or
the
by
chaos
Enlil,
dragon.
The chaos dragon, the equivalent of Leviathan, of Typhon of the Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of cultures that have that same myth, and I don't think it's a coincidence. I think they're all remembering the same original story of Yahweh defeating Leviathan, the chaos, and we see references to that in mm-hmm. Isaiah and in Psalms. So God, but in the other texts from the ancient Near East, from Mesopotamia, this struggle where a warrior god like Enlil or Ninurta or Baal, Hadad, the storm god, or Zeus had to get the help of other gods to create special weapons to defeat the chaos mm-hmm. dragon, the chaos monster. Thor, even in the Germanic and Norse pantheon, did battle with a mm-hmm. chaos mm-hmm. serpent. The
but
Hittites and Hurrians had the same thing, but they all struggled.
They all had to have a weapon.
And had to have a weapon, whereas Yahweh essentially just said, that's it, you're
mm-hmm.
done.
Toast.
Yeah, and the chaos, this force of chaos represented by the sea, mm-hmm. The ocean, is restrained. But we don't see the death of that entity, Leviathan, chaos, until Revelation 21, when the new heaven and the new earth are created, and the sea is no more.
Exactly.
So it's been restrained, but it's still there. So back to your question then, how and why did the B'nai Elohim, the sons of God, know what death was? Don't know. That's a puzzle.
We're going to talk more about that in a minute.
We will, as we tell you about that, about how you can get the four-book special offer in the Red Wing Saga, plus a couple of my
books.
Soon
to be a five-book.
Yes, soon to be book five, because that is now available. It's at the printers right now. And a new play. We've got our own website. We'll tell you about that right after this.
And I want to share something. I've asked the Lord in preparation for this book. I said, Lord, I'm asking you to show me some of the things that have kept believers from embracing their calling. And it was as if he said, Joe, I want you to share with people, with believers in particular, that they need to stop viewing themselves the way the world has made them view themselves, or how the world views them. Mm-hmm. This could be at work. Maybe your job has pounded you until you feel like you have less worth. Maybe it's a spouse. Maybe it was an abusive family member or friend. Maybe it's a vocation, maybe it's a venue, something in your life has made you feel like you possess less value. But God wants you to start viewing yourself the way that He views you. His perfect creation, designed just the way He did for His reasons, for such a time as this. And your future can be a white canvas filled with possibilities, a totally untold story yet. Everything behind the canvas, this is your past.
Right.
Doesn't matter anymore. But what you begin to paint from here on out, what is ahead of you, totally there for the making if you'll step in to the calling that He's commissioned you to walk in.
That's right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
Now ask yourself. Ask yourself a question. We know that God is not surprised by anything that we see happening politically, culturally. We know that in the year 2019, God is in complete control, is He not?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And every generation that has come before us and the one that we're facing now, God provides a plan, a redemptive plan for these people. And He always puts surrogates of His gospel on the earth to convey that message of hope to every generation, does He not?
Yes, that's absolutely. Right. Yes.
So while we may feel like the world is falling apart, and everything is unraveling, did God not put a plan in place to redeem this generation too?
Absolutely.
Of course.
My question is, what does that plan look like? God's not surprised by any of the stuff that we see. What was His plan? What does it look like? Who are His surrogates? You are that plan. You are the surrogate. You're the one put here right now for such a time as this to do exactly what God has commissioned you to do to reach this generation.
Welcome back to Sci Friday from Skywatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert along with Sharon K. Gilbert. Hey, we're now at scifriday.tv.
We've got our own website. Is that crazy or what?
Yes. You go there, you can see all of the videos of Skywatch. It's a very simple website.
No holding us back now.
That's right. One medium at a time. And we're not talking about the kind that Saul
went to
visit. No, we're talking about the singular of media. So, scifriday.tv, that'll get you the videos, and you can watch all the programs right there. Very simple website, but the whole point is just to get the videos out there.
You can also watch us on the app or on YouTube or whatever.
Absolutely.
And you can still get the four-book set, because the fifth book won't be into the warehouse probably for another 5 to 6 weeks at least. And I think we're going to be, the package is going to be very interesting. And it will include the Best of Sci Friday Volume 2.
Yes, which is a two-disc set. We are going to include 16 programs in that one.
And they're the themed shows that we've been doing over the last year and a half. And there are some really good topics in there. So kind of thing that you can share with your friends and introduce them to Sci-Friday.
Yeah, so keep watch for that. But in the meanwhile, go to the Skywatch TV store for the four-book special. It's a crazy deal. What is it? It's
$50 donation. You get lots of books plus the Sci Friday Volume 1. So you get two of Derek's books, four of my books, Sci Friday disc.
Yeah, and I think we're down to about the last three dozen Best of Sci Friday Volume 1. So until we get those printed again, those will be the last few dozen.
Yeah, we had like five with us in Dallas, and they went very quickly.
They're all gone.
By the way, I want to thank my friend Cindy for this beautiful top. My friend Cindy is helping me with jewelry and clothes, and she's just a whiz, and she's also helping us with research. So,
yes.
Cindy Martin, you're a doll, and we love you. We cannot imagine life without you.
She was a great help in Dallas.
She was indeed, and many of you met her there. Life after death.
Yeah. In the ancient world, and this is something we're discovering is far more important to biblical theology than we realized, and the idea, and isn't it interesting that the rituals that were required, again, by the spirits that masqueraded as the spirits of the ancestors, so the ancient Amorites who
believed... What we would call demons,
exactly, that they convinced the cultures around the ancient Hebrews, the Canaanites, but remember, the Canaanite is just a geographic term. They were Amorites. The Amorites believed that they needed to feed the ancestors once a month. Every month on the 30th day of the month, they had a ritual called the Kispum ritual, which was a ritual meal. They would have a communal meal where the family would get together. Then there were three parts of the ritual: the communal meal, the calling of the name, where they basically had to summon their ancestors by name. So all of the generations of the ancestors that they could remember were called literally by name. And then the third part was the pouring of water, or the pouring, a libation, a drink offering. Now we see drink offerings mentioned in the Bible a number of times. In fact, Paul saying he was, you know, ready to be poured out like a drink offering.
Mm-hmm.
This was so important, a part of the ritual, and I'm learning more about this as I research this now, that the son, the heir of the family, the oldest son, was called the pourer of water because he would take over the responsibility for pouring out the libation every month during that ritual. In some cases, they would even instill a... They would install a pipe in the ground that would lead to the mouth of the corpse. And according to what I've read, scholars who've been studying the ancient Amorites, fascinating culture, not one I'd want to live in, though, for the last century or so, have discovered that while they've dug up, you know, Amorite cities and settlements all over what we would today call northern Egypt, Israel, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Jordan, the Amorites controlled all of that. Northern Saudi Arabia. They've not found any community cemeteries. Okay? The community, apparently, it was the standard practice in the settlements, the walled cities in which they lived, to bury the ancestors below the floor of the house.
Oh, keep them close.
Apparently, so they didn't have to travel more than, say, 6 feet to get to that monthly meal.
To bring them up and go dancing.
Right. The reason they had to do this is because if they didn't feed them, the ancestors were condemned to spend the rest of eternity just eating dust and clay. Now, doesn't that sound like the curse that God proclaimed on the serpent in the garden, the Nakash?
Exactly. Yes.
You will crawl on your belly eating dust for your life,
Yes. The
rest of your life. That's what Mesopotamians believed about their life after death if their descendants didn't perform the correct rituals.
Now, didn't Abraham come out of that culture?
Yes, he did. Northern Mesopotamia. And I know we've been taught for generations that he came from Ur, which was discovered 100 years ago in southeastern Iraq. But there was a community called Ura, U-R-A, near Haran, which is in southern Turkey.
But the word Ur just means city.
Just means city, right. There is a documented city, Ura, near Haran, which, of course, is where Abraham began his journey into Canaan. And based on his lifestyle as a traveling merchant who lived in tents, was a pastoralist, you know, flocks and herds, that was the Amorite lifestyle, which explains why Abraham was so stressed about not having an heir.
Well, there are some sources that say that Abraham's father, actually, who's Terah, actually made the Teraphim, which were these small household gods. So Abraham,
which were part of that monthly ritual.
Yes, but also, if you do the counting, it's very possible that Noah lived until Abraham was born.
Yes.
If so, Abraham may have had an opportunity to learn the truth about Yahweh, and perhaps when Yahweh called him, it didn't surprise him a whole lot.
That's very true.
And so another reason why he was willing to go, but his experience that informed and modeled him as a human being, he would have thought, would have been taught that this is what you have to do. So that makes Abraham's obedience to the call of Yahweh even more spectacular.
It really does. You know, a lot of us will look at some of the events in his life, for example, when he tested Abraham by saying, look, take your son to Mount Moriah, which some scholars believe is just a modified form of Amorite, you know, Moriah, Amorite, to the mountain of the Amorites, which of course is Mount Zion today.
Yes.
God was signaling in 1750 BC, this is where, you know, I'm going to put my name.
And I'm coming after you, Amorites.
Exactly. But that was common enough, the sacrifice of children, that Abraham was like, okay, well, this is what Yahweh wants me to do. He's my God, so this is what I got to do. It was a test of his loyalty. And that's when, of course, the angel of Yahweh stepped in and said, no, don't do this. Here's the ram over here. That's what you're going to sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
Bearing in mind, you know, I've always seen the story taught that Isaac was a little kid, but he had to carry the wood up there.
He was probably in his early 20s.
A young man by that point. So, but anyway, this veneration of the dead was a regular practice. And, of course, the veneration of the dead kings of old, the mighty men who were of old, men of renown, was even more, but they had special status in the netherworld.
And let me just take that and move quickly to one more thought we want to leave with you.
Gosh,
and that is the idea that the Rephaim were supposed to be revivified by Baal, by El, that they were supposed to come up out of the ground, travel, and be born again.
Right.
Now the vision of the Valley of Dry Bones.
The Valley of Dry Bones in Ezekiel 37, where God restores them to life. It's basically Yahweh saying, this is what I will do for my people Israel. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, in Ezekiel 39:11, which is the culmination of the Gog-Magog War, the Battle of Armageddon, God says the travelers, in other words, the spirits of the Rephaim, they're called travelers in Canaanite texts that call the Rephaim, necromancy texts, they will be buried in the Valley of the Travelers east of the sea, east of the Dead Sea, where Moses and the Israelites camped before attacking Jericho, and it will block the travelers.
Yes, so I want to get to that, but I want to make sure that people understand that the Lord was saying, all of what you've been taught, that your ancestors are going to come back to life. I'm the one who has the ability to do that. I'm the one who's going to take dry bones and I am going to bring them back to life and put my spirit in them.
Yes.
So he is saying, not only am I going to do this, I'm also going to keep you from doing anything.
Exactly my point. Yes. You are still dead.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to stay dead.
And you are still toast.
Exactly. You are blocked. Whereas my people will be raised on that day, which even the patriarch Job saw.
And we have a hope as believers, and you are so right. We don't talk about the final body, this eternal body that we're going to have one day that's in the mind of the Lord already exists. But not only do we get new bodies, we get new names.
Yeah. That's something else we'll have to talk about at some point in the future. Well, this time has gone by way too quickly, but this is where our research is going, and a book that we'll have out later in the year. So keep watch for that. And meanwhile, thank you for watching as we keep watch with Sharon K. Gilbert. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is Sci Friday from Skywatch TV.